Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Hello, everyone. Today, we are on tape, and we thought we would play you some of our favorite recent segments. The first hour of today's show is a rebroadcast of an hour of the most recent show we did in WNYC's Jerome L. Green Performance Space in front of a live audience. Enjoy. And remember, we won't be taking any calls, obviously, but our comments page is always open. Just go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show. Live from the green space, it's New York, New Jersey, and the world. Good morning, everyone. Thanks to our audience here for coming. We are in the green space today. It's our ground floor theater here at 160 Varick Street at the corner of Charlton here at WNYC. As I said before the news, if you're in the area in Lower Manhattan, come on by. We'll be here until noon. Topic number one today is the growing enthusiasm gap toward President Obama among people who voted for him in 2008. And yes, I said people who voted for him in 2008. A new poll today from the Washington Post and ABC News finds the president with his lowest approval ratings yet. In general, nearly 6 in 10 voters say they lack faith in the president to make the right decisions for the country. And a clear majority, once again, disapproves of how he is dealing with the economy. Just 43% of all Americans now say they approve of the job Obama is doing on the economy, while 54% disapprove, according to the Washington Post. And here's where his voters come in. Even a third of Democrats give him negative marks here, says the Post. And overall intensity runs clearly against the president on the issue. In other words, twice as many people rated him strongly negative as strongly positive. So let's talk to two journalists who I think it's fair to say would rather see the president succeed than fail. And listeners, call us up if you voted for the president. Do you think he's doing well on the economy? And what would you like to see him do next? And listeners here in the green space and audience here in the green space, raise your hand if you want to answer that question at some point. If you're listening out there and want to call in, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. How is President Obama doing on the number one issue, according to voters today, jobs and the economy in general? And what would you like to see him do next? 212-433-9692. And with us here at the Green Space are Newsweek columnist Jonathan Alter, author of The Promise, President Obama, Year One, and Katrina Vandenhoevel, editor of The Nation magazine. One of their featured articles on The Nation homepage today is called Kabuki Democracy, Why a Progressive Presidency is Impossible for Now. Hi, Katrina. Hi, Jonathan. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hi,
welcome,
Brian,
to the Green Space. Katrina, the article in The Nation is by Nation contributor Eric Alterman. Do you agree with the idea that a progressive presidency is impossible for now?
You know, Eric's piece has, the first line has been read many times. What Eric's trying to talk about, I think, is important for progressives, which is that, hey, we live in America. It's tough to be a progressive in America. It takes more than one election to change the order of things. What Eric is talking about are the structural systemic obstacles to transformative change. And I think as progressives, we need to focus on fighting those obstacles, the corporate money polluting our system, the makeup of a Senate that is drowning the possibility of reform. That's not to excuse Obama, but it's to recognize that in America, the election we went through was not necessarily a victory for progressive government. It was a rejection of the most ideologically driven, incompetent, ugly administration in U.S. history. And I think we have to recognize both the achievements of the Obama administration and the real disappointments. The achievements, if I could just briefly, you got a health care reform, which is not what we wanted, but most social reform legislation in this country has been imperfect and flawed when first passed. It's up to us to fight to improve it. But it did provide access to 30 million Americans and regulate some of that health care, big pharma industry. Recovery program too small because Obama's conciliatory nature tried to bring on these Republicans who want to take him down. But it was the largest, albeit temporary, extension of anti-poverty money since the Great Society. So you got those. Then, of course, you got the disappointments. We can talk more. Afghanistan, civil liberties, foreclosure still going on, persistent unemployment. the Wall Street bailout without demands on the banks. So I think it's a mixed picture. But in America, nothing is perfect. And Obama's favorite line, I met him once, was the perfect is the enemy of the good. Well, the perfect is the enemy of the, you know, mixed. But it's up to Hope 2.0, which is about progressives, not depending on elected officials or Obama, but to organize independently to make real change.
No enthusiasm gap on the part of Katrina Vandenhoevel. And when you say...
I have to wake up every morning.
Perfection.
You know, got to keep it moving.
Perfection is the enemy of the good. Digging a little deeper in that article, Eric Alterman writes in his piece that he agrees with the conservative New York Times columnist, Ross Douthat, who said Obama is a doctrinaire liberal who's always ready to cut a deal and grab for half a loaf. He has the policy preferences of a progressive blogger, but the governing style of a seasoned Beltway wheeler dealer, or quoting from David Remnick's Obama book, Obama is a Paul who learned early on in Chicago that sometimes you can't get the whole hog, so you take the ham sandwich. Jonathan Alter, as author of The Promise, Obama Year One, how much does that ring true for you?
It rings very true. First of all, I am not Eric Alterman, although we are often confused. he has a man at the end of his last name. I think that is pretty much on target. It's something that a lot of progressives are uncomfortable with, partly because they've been out of power so long. Many, not all, don't recognize that politics has always been the art of the possible. The art of compromise. And the idea that Barack Obama could come in and wave a magic wand and everything was going to be better while progressives went on Miller time, oh, you know, we can relax now. It's up to him. We voted him in. We worked hard. That's not the way it works. And it's never worked that way, and it never will work that way. And so this... widespread sense of disappointment on the left, I think, is really misplaced. Has he done everything I would like? No. I agree with Katrina. I think he should have been tougher on the banks when he had more leverage at the beginning of 2009. I don't think he could have gotten a bigger stimulus package because the Democrats didn't want to go over $1 trillion, and $787 billion was more in public investment than Franklin Roosevelt in constant dollars got through in his first year. My sense is that the record is actually much better than people understand, and that's one of the things I tried to do in The Promise was to explain what really happened, in 2009, and there was a lot of history made. We've been cursed to live in interesting times, you know. But I also think that don't underestimate this man. So just because he's down in the polls now doesn't mean that somehow his promise has been shattered.
I mean, for what it's worth, Clinton was at this same point, and Reagan was a few points lower
Reagan
at the
was
same
in worse
time. So, you know, these polls, I mean, I have to say one thing Obama, I think, is smart about, and Jonathan and I may disagree because we are complicit in some of these cable shows. But Obama doesn't really watch much of that, and I think he's smart. He watches NBA games and other, I mean, I'm a big fan. It was a tough week in New York. But but I think one thing that I regret, and this is really in his power, that he was a great educator-in-chief on the campaign trail. Yeah. He has the extraordinary talent to communicate, and he was attacked at one point early in the primaries when he spoke in affirmative tones about Reagan and his ability to shape big ideas. And I think what we've missed is the ability to reframe the debate in this country because government is still viewed as an evil when we need it more than ever in all kinds of ways, not corporate government, but real government to change and improve the conditions of
people's
lives.
And I always thought that Reagan quote during the campaign or quote of Obama about Reagan was misconstrued and in many cases willfully misconstrued. He said he wanted to be like Reagan in terms of having a transformative presidency, not in terms of agreeing with Reagan's
policies.
One of the
things I have in The Promise is that he did that intentionally in order to change the dynamic, quote unquote, of the primary campaign against Hillary Clinton because he knew it would be like waving a red cape in front of the Clintons and that they would overreact and try to depict him as a Reaganite, and they would look bad. So that was part of the cunning Barack Obama. He's more cunning than we know. But I totally agree with Katrina that, you know, we expected him to ace communications and struggle in executive leadership. And instead, he's done extraordinarily well behind closed doors, which is what most of my book is about, and, you know, in getting things done. But he has really had a hard time connecting with the American middle class, and he's been disappointing as a communicator. And so he's got to figure out how to raise that passion level and also talk in language that people remember. There's a lack of stickiness to what he's saying.
Wait, what new world have we entered here? Obama, lack of being a good communicator,
yes.
But you know,
and lack of stickiness in his language.
Yes,
is this a different person inhabiting his body since the campaign?
Yeah, you know, I think what happened to him was, you remember Mario Cuomo used to say that you campaign in poetry and govern in prose. Barack Obama took that too much to heart.
But apart
and he forgot
from the
that you have
rhetoric,
to govern in poetry also.
I think one thing that – I think he demobilized his base in favor of inside the Beltway governance in a way that was detrimental to the ability of tapping the energy that brought him to the White House. Because, you know, the Obama campaign, he is an extraordinary figure. But for me, the excitement of the campaign were the people who came to work on it, the ordinary citizens who felt empowered and connected to electoral politics for the first time in a generation. And to demobilize that energy, you lose the counterweight to the establishment money, the big money, the interest in D.C.
And that's the enthusiasm gap that I'm really curious about right now among people who voted for him. I mean, what happened, Katrina, to the enthusiastic legions who, you know, turned out, the Netroots and everybody who turned out for Obama during the campaign when the health reform debate was going on? This was supposed to be the progressive holy grail since Harry Truman and before, and yet when it was in reach, the Tea Party formed to show vitriolic opposition, but the Netroots and other grassroots did not seem to materialize in support with the same passion. Jonathan referred to it as the progressives going on Miller time.
No, I mean, I think that's a little, you know, excuse the word simplistic, because I think you didn't see... First of all, I think the media overplayed the Tea Party. That is not to say the Tea Party, whatever different moving parts it has, doesn't exist, but you got three Tea Partiers in a room and you had four cameras. You have progressives mobilizing in different ways and it didn't get the same attention.
That's true.
You had one of the largest coalitions called HCAN, Healthcare for Americans Now, mobilizing. People were disappointed we didn't get the public option, which was already a compromise on Medicare for All. But you did have progressives mobilizing. There is an infrastructure. What we don't necessarily have is a movement. A movement demands moral leadership, demands organic issues from below. But I think we're beginning to see it, Brian, because of the economic pain in this country. I'm not going to tick off groups, but there is a group that just formed called One Nation. They're going to mobilize for a march in D.C., Jobs March, October 2nd. 170 progressive groups coming together. So I think it's there, but it's always tough when you got someone in the White House who you felt was going to walk on water. And I think, again, progressives need to understand that's not how politics
works. It's a little bit like in the 1963 March on Washington, where Martin Luther King gave his famous I Have a Dream speech. John F. Kennedy didn't show at that march. You know, he had King over later to the White House, and he had a kind of a slightly distant relationship with the civil rights movement. And we can look back and say, well, it would have been better if he had moved more aggressively. But in politics, you're competing. You have so many different competing forces. And I think what some people don't understand about Obama is he's not into gestures, into things that make everybody feel better because he has, you know, fought the good fight and lost. What he tells his friends is that, you know, his one of his great personal fears is that he'll look back in his, you know, late 50s or 60s after he's left the presidency and said, I could have gotten more done. This idea in the campaign that he's all talk and no action, it's almost completely the opposite for him. He wants to get legislation through and begin the process. And it's an ugly process. The healthcare debate, the sausage factory of Congress stunk so bad that it spoiled everybody's appetite for the meal. And by the end, by the time it got through, this was the biggest piece of social legislation in 45 years since Medicare and Medicaid. And even liberals did not really appreciate what we had accomplished.
Let's get a couple of callers in here. Let's go to line one, Antonia in Emerson, New Jersey. Antonia, are you there?
Thank you very much, Brian, for taking my call. My first point is Mr. Obama was very aware of the circumstances when he ran for president. So the idea of the saying that we have to wait, I agree. Change is difficult, but he knew what he was getting into. Point number one, medical. What we now have is a plan for insurance companies to trump the consumer. The legislation allowed the insurance companies to only pay 80% of every premium dollar in care, allowing them to take 20% for overhead and profit. Social Security, Medicare run at a 5% rate. Right off the bat, we're in a hole. Two, the continuation of the moral hazard with the banking institutions is ripping the middle class to death. I am a small business owner. I am down over 40% compared to when he took office.
Antonia, thank you. I'm going to leave it there just so we can get a few voices on before we get to the end of the segment. So let's go to Nick in Cliffside Park. Nick, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi there. Obama doesn't have to walk on water. He has to be willing, despite what Eric said, to fight for something that he's willing to lose on. A real gesture is required to get things done in the long run. He's not going to get reelected in 2012 with a disgusted base that's divided between itself, because many millions of progressives are frankly disgusted. I read it on Facebook all the time, and they fight with each other. And you've got a hardcore people who love Obama unconditionally, and they see people who criticize Obama in any way as backstabbers. And you have this crazy fight. Obama must get across to the American people that the 2008 campaign is not over. The Republicans want to reimpose the Bush agenda, which the vast majority of us do not want. And for the enthusiasm to be with the Tea Party minority is insane. We are the majority, and we have to assert that majority, and Obama has to lead us. That's what he has to do.
Nick,
running as a technocrat is not good enough.
Thank you very much. Jonathan, is that the key to the 2010 midterm elections?
I think that he's absolutely right that we have to all explain and teach the American people what happens if, as Obama puts it, the people who drove us into the ditch get the keys to the car back. You know, Speaker Boehner, it's just a disaster. These guys are radical right. It's not like there was a House Minority Leader through much of the 70s and 80s named Bob Michael, who was the ranking Republican in the House. He was a moderate Republican. If he had become Speaker, it wouldn't have been a big deal. If Boehner becomes Speaker, it's back to the Gingrich era. Do we really want that? Does the American public really want that? What liberals have to ask themselves are their particular disappointments with Obama. Should that be ahead of preventing a return to the bad old days because they don't like Obama and this or that? They're right in a lot of these criticisms, and I agree with them. I'm not an unconditional supporter of them, but grow
Katrina,
up. People need to grow up and recognize the real politics.
We just have half a minute left, but with the midterm elections coming, do you think that's going to do it? I mean, people are saying we want jobs, and Obama and Democratic congressional candidates are going to turn around and say Bush was evil?
I think it begins to speak to the issue, but your caller talked about Obama leading us and loving him. First of all, I don't love any politician. I love my family. And it's not – I mean, we have to be part of the solution, too. We have to push Obama beyond the limits of his own politics and be a counterweight, again, to this establishment corporate money.
Right.
But I do think that there are achievements and there are real disappointments. And I do think Jonathan's being
everybody's
a little too kind. The
Boehners,
the Bartons, and the Blunts make Gingrich look. I mean, Gingrich looks moderate compared to some of these radical right Republicans. But I think Obama Harry Reid should stay in Washington until they pass these unemployment benefits. Show that they're on the side of the working people, the jobless in this country, because the real problem. Your caller talked about the health care bill. It is flawed. It's conservative. We got to fight to improve it. Financial bill is tough, but not tough enough. And this problem in this country is that people feel the White House was too much on the side of the banks and not enough on the side of the working people. Fight for the working people and the jobless in this country.
Katrina Vandenhoevel, editor of The Nation, and Jonathan Alter. Your grandparents shortened it from Alterman when they came to this country, right?
Much longer.
Senior editor for Newsweek, contributor to MSNBC, and author of The Promise, President Obama, Year One. Thank you both
so
much.
Thanks, Brian.
Brian Lehrer and WNYC. More from The Green Space in a minute.